Hi, everybody. It's Bill. I'm an alcoholic. Like it was said at the beginning of the meeting, please make sure all your phones are off. Over the years, I've made some observations about things that I hear often by, people that I talk to and that I ask specifically about meditation. And, there's three things that I hear pretty often when I bring up meditation and I press people, do you meditate? And if so, what do you do? And one is, I find that when I ask people if they meditate, when they say yes, and I ask them what do they do and how do they do it, they usually say, I have this like daily reflection book and I read a page and then I think about it. And if you want to call that meditation, that's fine. I just need to let you know that when I talk about meditation, that's definitely not what I'm talking about. There's nothing wrong with that. I do that. But it's called contemplation and reflection. They're called reflection, daily reflection books for a reason, because it's reflection. It's not what I would refer to as meditation. Meditation is a much more interior kind of a thing. And then another thing that I hear very often when I hear people at meetings talk about meditation or when I ask people about meditation or whatever, they say something that I would assume that in their mind they think it's like a good answer or that it's something substantial, but in my mind they're not saying anything. And that is that very often people will say, prayer is talking to God and meditation is listening to God. And I don't know about you, but I have heard things in meditation, but, the other 99.999% of the time, I'm not listening to God. I'm just, I guess in my mind, what I try to do is just to create a space. And then another thing that I've been hearing. For some reason, I've been hearing something lately that I don't know where it's coming from, but I'm hearing it more and more often. And I just want to real quickly say that this is completely, I'm very opinionated and I have a lot of information and I have a lot of experience with a lot of things. But only rarely will I say that, please, this is completely off. Beware, red flag, no. And this is one of them, and that is that sometimes lately I've been hearing people say that meditation is quieting your mind. No, it isn't. Meditation is not quieting your mind. Sometimes in meditation your mind kind of winds down or whatever, but if your version of what meditation is quieting your mind, you're going to be at war with your mind for the rest of your life. So the nature of the mind is not to quiet down. So the goal of meditation is not to quiet your mind, because that's why would we give ourselves a goal that's not possible. As far as I'm concerned, meditation is more closely separating from the mind. So the mind can be doing whatever it's doing, and I don't have to necessarily be involved. That's a lot closer to what meditation is, as far as I'm concerned. But it's just interesting, because sometimes I hear stuff. And, this past week I was at a meeting, and the person, said that, basically this is what the person said, and I quote, since meditation is quieting your mind, and I've never been very good at that, I don't meditate, and what I do is my quiet time with God is done while I'm driving to work. And, that sounds like a good idea. I think the most important thing that I'm going to do in a day, which is maybe spend some time with God, I'm also going to be doing 10 other things. You know what I mean? This is how deeply distorted this person's mind has them. They're convinced that, this is what I should do, or this is how to do it, or whatever you want to call it. So, I just heard it again this week, and that's definitely not what I'm talking about when I talk about meditation. There's actually been a definition for meditation that I've been using for some years now. My teacher used this phrase, and I loved it so much. It's the greatest definition that I've ever used or that I've ever heard on what I believe meditation is. And what he said was that meditation is putting your attention on something other than thought. And, you know, having said that, meditation is putting your attention on something other than thought, then these thoughts come in and say, well, how do you do that? Well, those are thoughts. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We'll learn some things tonight that will help you with that. But, you know, most people's initial response to that definition is, I can't relate to that. My whole existence is in the mind. And I'm here to tell you, believe me, my whole existence was in the mind for most of my life. It's just not... It's definitely different now. I've been saying during this workshop that spirituality is having a different relationship with your mind, and this is getting right down to it as far as I'm concerned. Another thing I would say about what I mean when I talk about meditation is that ultimately meditation is about self-acceptance. And if we can go within and just have acceptance of whatever it is that's happening, the more and more we're able to accept ourselves, then and only then will we have any chance of accepting other people. Like I was saying last week, it's all about, you know, if I can have love for myself, then and only then can I have love for somebody else. If I can forgive myself, then and only then I can forgive somebody else. And if I can go within, no matter what. The mind might be active. The neighborhood garbage truck might show up, you know, when I'm trying to spend 5 minutes in silence. If I can just, during the official period of meditation, just completely be accepting of what is, then and only then do I have a chance of finding it more and more in my life as I go out, because, you know, like I said weeks ago, the world is filled with script violators. And we have this script in our head about how it should be, and we're surrounded by people that don't live up to our expectation. As a matter of fact, they're everywhere. And I know some of you are here tonight as well. I'm just joking. You know, for me, first of all, meditation is mentioned throughout AA literature, so obviously it's a very strong suggestion. So if I have to, if I feel that meditation is a priority, which for me it is, and obviously AA believes that it's a priority because they talk about it constantly, then I need to find some ways to be right with whatever it is that I find during meditation. And therein is the exercise, really. That's the spiritual exercise, is to be right with what is. That's it. That's our goal in life. Just to be right with what is. I remember, this may be hard for many of you to believe, but some years ago, I was watching a video about this spiritual teacher, and in the middle of the video my mind shut off, and it stayed that way for about 3 days. My mind completely shut off. Now people said to me, you know, how could you tell? And I said, how could I tell, man? My whole entire life it was like 20 radios were on in a room screaming at me, and then all of a sudden all the radios got shut off. You better believe I noticed that. What does it mean, my mind shut off? You know, I was able to drive to work. I was able to engage the world. I just didn't have this commentary of everything. I didn't have, which is our constant state, and that is what I would call reality, which is just what's happening, and then in my head, a story about what's happening. There wasn't any of that going on. There was just the reality of what was happening, and I was engaging with it. There wasn't this Howard Cosell commentary of everything. They shouldn't be doing that. You know, this is wrong. This is bad. You know what I mean? Like, things were just the way they were, and the story wasn't dragging me along. The argument wasn't there. And it was a really beautiful period of time, and I wish I could get back to it. But my mind started up again 3 days later or whatever. And while I was in that, I would call it a spiritual experience, what came to me, or rather what I, what sort of flowed through whatever was going on at the time, was the phrase, the truth will set you free. And I, from this state that was my life for 3 days, I engaged with that expression, the truth will set you free. What does that mean? I had always wondered for many, many years, what does that mean, the truth will set you free? What does that mean? I don't know what that means. I don't know anybody that's ever explained to me what that means. I don't think anybody can explain what it means, and yet I'm going to try. And what I discovered during that period of time was that the truth will set you free is the truth is what is without adding a story to it. So in other words, if I'm just with whatever it is that's going on, responding to it naturally without adding a story to it, then that's very freeing. Mm. And that was what I discovered during that period of time, was as far as I see, that's what I think that phrase means. The truth is just whatever is happening right here, right now. Right now we're just sitting in a room. I'm not asking you to agree or disagree with you. I'm just asking you to let it in. Just be with whatever it is that's being said. Be with whatever it is that's happening. But as soon as I create a story toward whatever it is that's happening, then therein lies the misery, and therein lies the difficulty, and therein lies the constant argument with what is. For some reason, we as alcoholics have this critical nature. We have this judgmental nature. And it seems to me, from being around other people, that I think this is exactly what the book is talking about when it says that we're an extreme example of self-will run riot. We're not just an example of self-will run riot, we're an extreme example of self-will run riot. You know what I mean? And I think this is why. That the mind has us convinced that we are it, and it just takes us for a ride. As a matter of fact, I saw a quote one time that I really love. It said that the mind would have killed us long ago if it didn't need us to move around. Is that like perfect, right? You know, like it probably would have killed me long ago if it didn't need me. You know what I mean? Like it has to attach itself. It's like this. It's like this parasite I've heard it described as, which is a really great way of describing it. It's like a parasite. It just takes over without... It takes over in a cunning, baffling, and powerful way to the point where we hardly even notice. It just dominates us, and it doesn't want to let us realize that that's actually what's happening. But since we're an extreme example of self-will and riot, and since we're an extreme example of what I would call self-sabotage, that we reach a point in our life where it's like, I just can't take it anymore. It's just too much. Mm. It's too much. And then, hopefully, we start hearing talks like this. And hopefully we start noticing that, hey, the big book is talking exactly about this. That we need to consider another way besides our own. Mm. And I hope that with the meditations that we work with tonight that you can begin to get a glimpse of something, because you know, I reached a point in my life where I was like, you know, I can't take it anymore. I just can't take it anymore. I am just insane. I'm insane when I'm drinking, and I'm insane when I'm not drinking. So where's door number three? There is no door number three, because either you're drinking or you're not drinking. There's no other alternative. And then, you know, I was turned on to the program, and I was turned on to certain spiritual ways that are very compatible with the book. And, you know, the book even talks about see where religious people are right. So it's even encouraging. It's the only piece of spiritual literature I've ever read that said it's okay to go outside our group to be influenced by somebody else's literature. There's whole religions that say, no, don't read other religions, only read our religion. And I think one of the reasons why they say that is because what I've discovered in dabbling in a lot of the major religions and spiritual paths is that they all say exactly the same thing. They all say exactly the same thing. If you read the literature, you would think they were all written by the same person, and technically they have been, because God worked through somebody, and that was what happened. That was where the big book came from. And God worked through some people, and that's where the Bible came from. And God worked through, you know, this is where the spiritual literature comes from. And, you know, even people like Albert Einstein said, you know, I didn't think of these things. They just came to me. I take no credit for it. He was aware enough to see that it wasn't his thinking and it wasn't his ideas, that something landed, something outside of his mind came into his mind, and that was where he got his ideas from. And he took no credit for it at all. I mean, how humble is that? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's where all, you know, great and even not so great music comes from, and that's where all great and not so great art comes from, and some of the greatest moments you've had in your life, that was where it came from. And, you know, I always think it's kind of funny that, you know, the reason why, you know, musicians and artists kill themselves is because they want to take credit for what's happening, and they're not aware enough to see that it's actually happening through them. It's not them doing it in the first place. They have no right to take credit for it. They have no idea where it's coming from any better than we do. But they think that they're, you know, these great human beings that, you know, I created that. No, you didn't create that. It created through you. Your children happened through you. Your children don't belong to you. Your children belong to the world. Mm-hmm. And all the greatest parenting that there ever was the parent stayed the hell out of the way. That's called great parenting. So, what I would use as a definition for meditation is putting my attention on something other than thought. Now, here's a really good quote that I like, and that this is a pointer that might be helpful. It goes like this: watching is meditation. What you watch is not the point. The object of your watching is not the point. The quality of observation, the quality of being aware and alert, that's what meditation is. Whatsoever you do with awareness is meditation. Real meditation knows nothing of distraction. That's its grace, its beauty, its grandeur. Nothing can disturb it. If your meditation can be disturbed, that simply means that you are concentrating and that you have not yet tasted meditation. Meditation is so vast, it can contain everything, absorb everything, and yet remain completely empty. So something that I want to help you see within yourself is that there is this field of being, there is this field of awareness, there is this field of consciousness where everything comes and goes. Sounds, if your eyes are open, I'm going to have you have your eyes closed when we meditate, but even if your eyes are open, when you're going through your regular day, there's this field of awareness that is always and already there. It's the place where God and we can meet. And that description is not very good because there is no us and it. It's just the field. And sensations come and go, thoughts come and go, sounds come and go, guidance comes and goes. And it's even there when we're sleeping. But you see, when we're sleeping, there isn't anything coming and going in the field. So the field is just there. It's always there. But nothing is happening in the field when we're sleeping. And if something is happening, that's called remembering a dream. And sometimes we don't remember the dream. But and this field is our spiritual nature. This field is who and what we really are. And this field is our essence, for lack of a better expression. And there's not even any time happening. We've all experienced just watching a sunset, and all of a sudden it's a half hour later and we didn't even notice that, you know, we were just there with the sunset, or we were there with some hobby that we do, or we were there with some activity. Like, I remember I was a semi-pro baseball player, and I was stricken with potential. I had some really serious athletic potential, really serious. I mean, I should have been a professional baseball player, and drugs and alcohol stopped it instantly. And I remember when I was pitching, it was as if I wasn't even there. I was completely one with the ball. I was completely one with my arm. I was completely one with the batter. I was completely in the zone, which is what athletes call it. I was completely in the zone. It was a complete meditation for me. I was so focused, there was absolutely nothing else going on. It was very much what I would describe as meditation, or how I talk about it or practice it today. And we all have, you know, some hobby or some interest. And I do mean to be inappropriate. Hopefully you've all experienced it during sex. Because during sex, something happens. We just, like, disappear. You're so focused on sensations that you don't know how much time has passed. It's like you just become one. There's two people there. Hopefully you're with somebody else. There's no intellectualizing it. You know what I mean? There's no story. There's just, you're just there. And there's a reaction, and there's a movement, and then you switch, and there, it's just happening organically. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm talking about. It's a timeless state. And I remember, you know, my father used to fix watches. He worked for AT&T as an executive, and what he would do to... I really think that he did it to wind down. You know what I mean? He did it as stress release, I really believe. And I remember being in the basement, and that was where my father's watch desk was. As a matter of fact, he worked at a jewelry store, and the jewelry guy gave him this desk. And it had all these millions of drawers with all these small pieces for, you know, manual watches. I remember him being really disappointed when it all went digital, because he really loved fixing watches and clocks and cuckoo clocks, and you know what I mean? Like, people would just give him stuff to fix. You know, he wouldn't charge anybody, he would just fix it. He just loved doing it. He was just into it, you know what I mean? And I would be down in the basement, and I'd, you know, in the same room where the watch thing was the pool table, so sometimes we'd be playing pool. And I just noticed that it was as if my father would just disappear. You know what I mean? Like, his physicality didn't change. But you know what I mean? Like, he would just disappear, and then all of a sudden he would pick his head up and it was 2 hours later. You know what I mean? And in his experience, it was probably like 5 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, he was just into it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And we've all experienced it. And it's a timeless state. Because we're just there. We're just with what is. It's not filtering through the mind. The mind is what creates the time. The mind is what wants us to be worried about the future. It's the mind that wants us to be pissed about what's happened in the past. It's the mind that rejects the present moment, which is the only thing that exists. And as far as I'm concerned, this is the essence of conscious contact. this is exactly what it's talking about when it talks about conscious contact and when it talks about improving conscious contact. Now, as far as I'm concerned, the deeper levels of prayer and the deeper levels of meditation are the same. But obviously prayer is a little bit different as it's probably normally engaged. And meditation is, what I'm talking about, is probably different than what a lot of people have experienced. Because, you know, what I've found is, and hopefully a lot of you have discovered this by, you know, going to the self-help section of the bookstore, you know what I mean? There is a lot of crap out there. Mm. There is a lot of what I would refer to as spiritual bubblegum. Spiritual bubblegum is like, you know, it seems like I'm doing something, but I'm not doing anything. You know what I mean? There's no transformative value to what it is that I'm doing. And, you know, there's ways of meditating that uses imagination, and there's nothing wrong with it, but I don't, that's not what I'm talking about, because that's engaging the mind. When I'm using my imagination, I'm engaging the mind, so this is definitely not what I'm talking about. There's nothing wrong with it, I've used it. But what I started discovering was that there were these deeper ways of working with meditation that really do make a difference and that really do help me with my everyday life, and that really help me to just be right here with what is happening with me, and then and only then does it make it easier for me to be with others. Like I had said earlier in this workshop, all the neurosis that I had years ago, I still have. It's just that working with spiritual things has made the whole thing a lot softer. I don't know that I'm ever going to lose, you know, it's almost like my personality, my, you know, my engagement with neurosis. I don't know that it's ever going to just go away or whatever you want to call it. But I just know that, you know, working with the steps and meditation and spirituality and stuff like that has made the whole thing softer and easier to deal with and easier for the people around me, I think, hopefully. Now, I want to point out the shirt that I'm wearing. It says, "How I Wish You Were Here." Not only is this a really great Pink Floyd album, but at many of my meditation workshops, I like displaying this message because it's sort of my commentary on the world. Mm-hmm. Because most of the time we're not here. Most of the time we are just, you know, we leave work, we get into our car, we drive a half hour home, and we have absolutely no memory of any turns or any activity that we did until we got home because we are so stuck in our head. We were so creating a story about the past and creating a story about the future that we totally missed. The half hour just went away. We have no memory of the past half hour because we are so in our head. And so this shirt is sort of my commentary to the world because, you know, I wish you were here because normally we're not. We're not here very much. And, you know, I've shared this before that it's kind of funny to me because it's like, I don't know about you, but I remember just before I came to AA, I really felt very strongly that, like, my life was just passing me by. You know what I mean? There were things I wanted to do. I wasn't engaged. There were things I wanted to do that wasn't happening. And I really felt like life was passing me by. And that was because it was. I wasn't present to anything. I wasn't present to anything. Things were just happening. I was just looking for my next buzz in all the wrong places. You know what I mean? In all the wrong ways. And in really evil and corroding activities. And, you know, much of my life was spent, you know, drinking and using drugs and finding ways and means to get more. You know, from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to sleep, I needed to prepare. You know what I mean? You need to, like, prepare for, you know, how is it going to go down today? How are you going to make sure you get what you want? How are you going to make sure that you keep it going? How are you going to make sure that you don't interfere with the source? I had a funny habit of going to different liquor stores to buy liquor because I didn't want any one of them to know how much I was drinking. Like any of them would even care, you know what I mean? Like I was so self-centered that, you know, I would go to these different liquor stores because I didn't want anybody to notice, wow, this is, you know, this is the 6 month in a row, you know what I mean? Like daily. So just some thoughts on meditation. Now, I want to say one more thing, and then maybe we'll sit together for a little while. And that is this. And I think I've said this in every meditation workshop I've ever done. And that was that there is no single thing more beneficial physically, mentally, spiritually, psychologically, emotionally. There is no single thing more beneficial on all the levels that we are human than meditation. There's no single thing that's more beneficial. There might be a combination of things that, you know, maybe contribute more, better to our well-being or whatever, but there's no single thing that's more beneficial emotionally, mentally, spiritually, physically, psychologically than meditation. But, you know, I don't have time today. You know what I mean? I say mockingly. I've had conversations with people that said, well, you know, I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, so I don't have time to meditate. And, you know, I mean, no matter what, I mean, we could always get up 3 minutes earlier. I mean, there's no question about it. You could always get up 5 minutes earlier. And what I always say to people that say that to me is something that they always hate and that I love saying. Mm-hmm. And that is that, you know, it's not that you don't have time to meditate, it's that it's not a priority for you. And then I'll say something to them that's even more extreme and that's even more offensive to all these people that I talk to. And that is, I'll say to them, you know, do you always find time to eat? And they'll say, well, you know, you have to eat. I mean, I always find time to eat. And I'd say, I think meditation is more important than that. Because there's no single thing that's more beneficial. Plus, it's a big part of our program. It says throughout the steps and it says throughout our literature that we should be meditating. I can't even begin to tell you all the studies that exist now to the benefits of meditation, the benefits of prayer. So, you know, don't let your mind fool you. If you don't meditate, it's not because you can't. If you don't meditate, it simply means that it's not a priority for you. Now, it is a priority for me, so for almost 20 years now, I think I might have missed maybe 3 or 4 days of meditating. I might have missed 3 or 4 days. That's it. It's absolute priority for me. Now, I do these workshops pretty regularly, so I don't want to be one of those people that say that this is important and then I'm not doing it. So that's part of the motivation, but the incredible benefits that I've experienced because of it is absolutely undeniable and absolutely convinced me that I have to do this. And it's not the kind of thing where, you know, I have to do it, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like you have to go to the dentist, you know what I mean? Like, it's not that for me. I wake up every morning and I always have to pee first. For some reason, at my age now, I have to pee as soon as I get up. And probably had a pee during the night once, so that's all if you really need to know. And I wake up and I use the bathroom, and then I go downstairs and I feed my cats because they're all freaking out because they haven't eaten since we went to sleep. And then I go into the living room and I sit for 20 or 30 minutes in silence every single morning without exception. And it's brought great benefit in my life. Not only am I happy, but the people around me are happy, believe me. So, a little advertisement there for you. I also think it's good to meditate in the same place every day. Now, sometimes, you know, maybe we're traveling or we're, you know, on vacation or something, then obviously that's going to change. But there's something that happens when we meditate in the same place over and over, and that is that there's sort of this accumulative spiritual energy that starts to happen in that space. I have a second bedroom that's my meditation room, and if anybody ever sleeps over my house, that's where they'll sleep. Mm-hmm. And so many people have said, you know, that was one of the best night's sleeps I've ever had. That room is so quiet and it's so calm. And that's as the result of that's what I do in that room. Mm-hmm. Also, I think that we don't... I would never stop somebody from meditating, you know, two or three times a week or something like that. I would never suggest not to do that. But I really never started to experience the real benefits of meditation until I started doing it every day. When I would only do it two or three times a week, it was as if, you know, when I didn't do it for a couple of days, my engagement with life would start dipping into -2 and -4 and -5. And then I would meditate, and that would kind of bring me back to zero. And that day I would usually have a better engagement with life. And then I would not do it again for two or three days. And then those two or three days I would start to have like a 2 or 3 or 5 negative response to life. And then when I would do it, I would keep bringing myself back to zero. So I saw the benefit of it, but I was never experiencing the, you know, the +1 and the +3 and the +5 and the +100 that I experience now. So I would never suggest that it's bad if you only meditate a few times a week, but I would strongly suggest that you're not really experiencing the full benefit of it until we start doing it every day. Obviously, it needs to be, you know, a time and a place where there's not a lot of busyness. You know, I remember saying to this woman one time, she had, I think she had 7 kids, and they were all relatively young, and she said, you know, I can't meditate, I have 7 kids. And I said, let me give you 2 suggestions. One, when you're stopped at a red light, close your eyes. Don't worry, the person behind you will let you know when the light changes. And 2, when you're on the toilet.
You still don't get peace there.
I understand that sometimes you don't. But all I'm saying is something that they never thought of. And you know what's interesting? She actually got back to me and the toilet thing really worked for her. She had never considered that. We have these opportunities through the day. If it really is so bad, what about sitting outside of your work for 10 minutes before you go in? You are absolutely alone. So, you know, again, it simply means that it's not a priority for us if we choose not to do it. Please don't let the mind kid us. It's not the truth that we can't do it. So, in exactly the position you're in right now, just simply close your eyes. We don't have to adopt a holy position or something. Just exactly as you are, just simply close your eyes. And let's start with 3 really deep breaths in and out. So take a deep breath in and a deep breath out and do that 3 times. To the point where it almost hurts. Very deep breaths. And then settle down into normal, unforced, uncontrolled breathing. But gather your attention at the tip of the nostrils and just begin to notice as the air comes in and out of your nose. So just begin to become aware of the sensation of air coming in and out with your focus right on the tip of the nose. And if your mind says, you know, this is stupid, I don't want to do this, just silently to yourself say, thanks for sharing, and then bring your attention back to the nostrils. And you might need to do that 20 times during the next whatever minutes. But just gather your attention at the tip of the nostrils, and notice the air as it comes in and out at that spot. Just notice the sensations as the air comes in and out. Really focus. Again, you know, if a noise distracts, just notice you've been distracted and then just bring it back. It's not a bad thing that you got distracted. It's a good thing that you noticed that you were distracted and then you can bring yourself back. Now look a little bit closer and see if you can notice that when the air comes in, it's cooler than when it goes out, because the inside of the body is warmer than the room. So see if you can notice that the temperature of the air as it comes into the nostrils is cooler than the air that goes out at the tip of the nostrils. You really need to sort of fine-tune your awareness. And then bring your attention further into the body and just notice at the center of the chest. Begin to notice the expansion and contraction of the lungs. Gather your attention at what does it feel like as your air comes into your chest and it expands? And what does it feel like when it contracts as the air leaves? It's interesting because we're always breathing and our heart is always beating, but we never notice it. Just gathering your attention and noticing the breath is a really good way to take a break in stressful situations. Just become aware of the activity of the lungs and what it feels like there. I know when I first started doing this, I was surprised at how large the lungs were. I always thought the lungs were sort of like the top third of the chest or whatever, but the lungs actually go all the way down to the belly. There's this big, huge space in the chest that is the lungs being active. Maybe take one deep breath and just be aware of the sensations of what that feels like. We hardly even notice that the lungs processing the air is a miracle. It's the miracle of life. Something that you begin to notice is that every single breath is different than the one before it. And then when the time seems right, just open your eyes. There's this really great quote, and it goes like this, that God's grace is always falling down like rain, but usually we forget to cup our hands. And one of the ways that we cup our hands is through meditation. God's grace is always falling down like rain, but we usually forget to cup our hands. Wow. I really love this quote. She says, "Give yourself 1 second to just retreat, to be still. In the midst of an argument, in the midst of busyness, in the midst of turmoil, there is 1 second that everyone has to simply be still, to let it all fall away. Whatever is going on, whatever opinions you have, whatever fight may be happening, or even whatever agreement may be happening, just take a moment, retreat into yourself and be still. Tell the truth about what's here. It's always here." Now, the handout that you guys are going to get tonight is going to have notes on this. So you don't necessarily need to keep notes on this, but I want to share something that I usually share when I do this workshop, and it's really important. And, you know, AA has that term, you know, conscious contact. It's almost like conscious contact is sort of the goal, you know what I mean? And the more we can have conscious contact in a day, that's usually a pretty good day. In reading a lot of spiritual literature and a lot of religious literature and studying the great religions and the great spiritual paths, not only do they all say the same thing, and what they say, actually, which is interesting to me, and it's interesting because it's found in the Big Book also, which I would consider a piece of spiritual literature. I would also suggest that AA at its deepest levels, or at its highest levels, however you want to phrase that, I would say that AA, the 12-step program found in the Big Book, that this program at its deepest levels is the same thing that you're going to find at the deepest levels of all religions. And what's the same thing that all the religions say is that within us there is this thing called a higher power. There is this piece of us that is of God. It's our essential nature. It is who and what we really are. It's the place where we engage the spiritual element. That within everyone, there is this thing called God. And that each of the religions and the spiritual paths and the Big Book have a way to get in touch with that part of us and to awaken to it, for lack of a better expression. It's always and already there, but our mind has us blocked. We're spiritually ignorant, and it doesn't mean that we're stupid. It means that we're ignoring our spiritual nature. Even though it's always there, you know what I mean? Our conscience was always there. It's never going to die. There were many times where I wasn't speaking very much anymore because I just wasn't listening to it at all. But and then once you awaken to that place within you that is of God, spend the rest of your life living from that place. And that's what all the major religions and all the spiritual paths say. That within us there is this thing that you can call God or whatever you want to call it. It's who and what we really are. And there's a way to get in touch with that. There's a way to see it everywhere. There's a way to be with it always. And then once you are there, to live from that place for the rest of your life, from that place as you go through life. And that's what they all say. That's what all the major religions say. But another thing that I found, I originally got this from Eckhart Tolle, but then as soon as I, something that I do is I send out emails every day to over 1,000 people. And it's basically spiritual recovery, you know, stuff like that. And when I find something that really resonates with me, I capture it somehow so I can send it out. Or I'll be listening to a tape and then I'll pull over, and sometimes I don't pull over. I'll write it down. So, you know, I heard it once, so it came in. I heard it again because I had to write it down. And I had to keep rewinding it to make sure I wrote it down correctly. So I'm internalizing it a few times now. I get home, I type it into my computer, I internalize it again. And then I send it out to people. And just before I send it out to people, I read through it just to make sure that there's not a typo. And I'm sort of a perfectionist. So now I internalize it again. So I didn't notice this until, you know, maybe the last 10 years. But, you know, for many years I had been doing this, but what I didn't realize was it was a form of education. I was internalizing it. And I was noticing that, you know, sometimes I'll give talks and then just out of nowhere this quote will come into my head and I'll share it. And I'm just like, you know, I never knew that was in there. Like, you know, I never knew that was in there. And yet it was in there. And I was able to draw from it. You know what I mean? Like it came to me, or it came from me, or whatever. I don't like that term. I don't think it was from me, but it just landed. And I send it out. And as soon as I read the quote in the ET book, I started seeing it everywhere in all the literature that I was reading. And I was like, wow, this is one of those things that they're all talking about. And what I mean is that there's only three gateways into instant conscious contact. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying there's three major ones or that there's three popular ones. I'm using the language that is succinct with what I'm trying to say. There are only three gateways into instant conscious contact. And like I said, your handout will have this, so you don't have to take notes. The first gateway is complete acceptance of what is. In other words, allowing everything to be as it is. The second gateway into instant conscious contact is being completely in this moment. In other words, no past and no future. And the third gateway into instant conscious contact is to drop into the body. Because what you find in the body is always in this moment. There's no future heartbeat. You know what I mean? There's no past heartbeat. All there is the heartbeat that's happening right now. So the third one, I always like saying dropping into the body below the neck, because then you know I'm not talking about going into the mind. This is very important. This is very important. It's not the story of the present. It's just the present. It's not the story of no argument. There's just acceptance. It's just acceptance. And what's interesting is that everyone in this room, everybody on the face of this earth, and everybody anywhere that's ever had a spiritual experience, one, two, or all three of those conditions were present when it happened. And what's also interesting about the three gateways into conscious contact, that there's only three gateways into instant conscious contact, is that the first one is allowing everything to be as it is, complete acceptance of what is. The only thing that doesn't accept this moment is the mind. So the mind is not necessary to accept. As a matter of fact, the only way you can accept is to disengage from the mind. The only way you can really forgive and forget is to disengage from the mind. Because it's the mind that wants to hold on to it. Because they owe you, which is a story. It's a good story. You know, it's a reasonable story. It's a story you'll get traction with. You know what I mean? You'll find people that will agree with you that you were screwed when you were, you know, attacked that day. But it's still a story nonetheless. And it will give you no peace until you drop the story. And that it's only the mind that doesn't want to be in this moment. It's only the mind that wants to be pissed about what happened and worried about what hasn't happened yet. It's only in the mind. So to be completely in this moment, the mind is completely unnecessary. To have complete acceptance of what is, the mind is completely unnecessary. And the same thing when we drop into the body and we're just with the heartbeat or with the breath or with the sensation of what does it feel like to go like this with my finger? I just moved my finger, one finger. It was my forefinger, it wasn't the dirty finger. So it could have been. The dirty finger is a story, right? It's just a finger. Is it called the dirty finger? No, it's the middle finger. That's right. Never mind. The dirty finger would be after something. No, it's, I don't have to get into that. So it's interesting because in the mind basically is a three-trick pony. The mind is in a constant state of pissed about the past, pissed about something that's already happened. I'm afraid about something that hasn't happened yet. And then the third trick in the three-trick pony is that the mind doesn't think that the present moment is very important and that what's important is that you should worry about a bill that's not due yet. Yeah. You know what I mean? The mind completely rejects this moment as insignificant. And what's interesting about just that one fact is that the present moment is the only thing that's real. So the mind has no interest in reality at all. It just wants to be a virtual reality of pissed about the past and worried about the future. And you shouldn't have done that. And the stories and the stories and the stories. Mm. And the criticism and the judgment and the argument with. When you argue with reality, you lose but 100% of the time. But that's our whole strategy for life, right? We want to argue with reality. We just want to argue with it. They shouldn't have done that, you know? And then, you know, as alcoholics, we are the worst mind readers of all time. Like, you know, people aren't even saying anything or doing anything, but, you know, they're thinking at us, you know what I mean? We know what they're thinking. We know what they're thinking, you know what I mean? Like, that's always an interesting story. I've never met an alcoholic that didn't completely relate to that part of it. Just, we are the worst mind readers of all time. And it's one of our strategies for life, right? So, three gateways into instant conscious contact. Complete acceptance of what is, allowing everything to be as it is. I didn't say it was going to be easy. But I will say that when you do it, it's easy. When you have complete acceptance of what is, it's very easy. It's totally peace. It's totally a rightness. And then being completely in this moment. You know, again, we've all had experiences. You know, maybe you were at, you know, your favorite band's concert and everybody was just there and you were just hanging on every note. You know what I mean? And, you know, then you looked at your watch and it was 2 hours later and it seemed like, you know, 20 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, you were just there. You were just completely in this moment. No problems. Complete escape. And more that we're able to have these moments, and more we're able to move toward these moments in meditation, the more we're able to bring it into our regular lives. And that's why, you know, the official time of, you know, meditative practice is important because it's a warm up for, you know, when my kid is just talking to me and I can just have this conversation and he's talking and I'm not waiting for him to stop so I can talk. I'm not preparing an answer. He's saying something. And then he sort of stops, and then I say something. It just all happens real naturally. And he loves talking to me. Like, he loves talking to me. Because I'm not suggesting that he should be any different than he is. You know what I mean? Like, his parents are sort of you know, sort of emotionally involved. They sort of have this thing that my parents had, and that is that, you know, I need to behave because so they look good. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That doesn't work. Ladies and gentlemen, that's not... Please, notice the futility of that, please, as quickly as possible. There's nothing more annoying than you have to behave a certain way so I look good. You have nothing to do with me. You know what I mean? You might have noticed I mentioned his parents and then I was calling him my son. He's my second ex-wife's son, so he's not my child. But since the day that I met him at an AA meeting, he was this little kid that was just sitting on the side reading Goosebumps books. And his mom was, I didn't even know who his mom was for like months. I would just see this 8-year-old kid at a meeting. And I always try to talk to kids that are at meetings because, you know, they're kind of out of their element. They're kind of, there's nobody there with them. You know what I mean? I mean, obviously their parents are there or whatever. But like I always try to engage kids and pets because I just appreciate them being here. And I'm sure it might be just a little bit uncomfortable, you know what I mean? Because they'd rather be somewhere else, I'm sure. And so I just started talking to this little kid, and it was like this incredibly special kid. And then his mother would come along and ruin it because then she would take him away, you know what I mean? And then I was just like, oh wow, she's kind of cute, you know what I mean? Like I absolutely was in love with this kid before I even saw a mom, you know what I mean? And then you know I saw a mom, and then we went out and. And ever since that day that I saw him, I saw Chris at that meeting, I've just been in love with this kid. You know what I mean? And it's really interesting because I said to him, I said, listen, I never want you to call me dad. I'd like you to just consider to me to be an adult friend. And if you need anything or if you're having any problems or whatever, you can talk to me. And that was, I established that relationship from the beginning and I kept it there. I never got parental on him, you know what I mean? And he's just this really, really incredible kid. And, you know, a couple of years ago, he got into a car accident, and, like, I was the first person that he called. Like, you know what I mean? Like, on some level, I'm closer to him than his parents are. And, you know, they're doing their life, and, you know, like, I just love this kid, and I don't have any kids, so this is my kid, you know? And he just tells his friends that I'm his uncle. Because if he tries to explain anything else, it just gets too complicated. It's too long of an answer. This is my uncle. You know what I mean? It's just easy. So, and you know, any time that we've ever been around, you know, maybe my friend's there or something like that, and I'll say, you know, this is my son Chris, and he like beams, whenever I call him my son. So, he's my son. You know, I really, really appreciate this relationship, and I really, really appreciate that. I didn't get parental with it, you know what I mean? And there might have been like a brief period of time when we were like living together or whatever that, you know, I made a couple of mistakes around that, but like I just really, this relationship was really special to me, but it's only because, and it's special to him, and it's only because, you know, when we're together, he's just there and he's not distracted and focused on anything else, and I'm just there and I'm not distracted and focused on anything else. I'm just in the moment and he's talking and I'm talking, and it's so natural and it's so different than a lot of the other relationships that I have where there's, you know, this almost neediness or there's this, you know, this role playing. We don't play roles, we're just with each other. Mm-hmm. It's the essence of love as far as I'm concerned, but it's just being there. It's not playing the game of relationship, it's being relationship, you know what I mean? It's so different. It's so very different. And these are some of the rewards of, you know, the more and more I'm able to have self-acceptance, the more I'm able to have acceptance of him and others. So again, in the exact position you're in right now, just close your eyes. And gather your attention at the center of your chest and just begin to notice your breathing. Just notice, what does it feel like now as my lung takes in air and releases the air? One of the ways I like describing it is, notice your current breath as if it's going to be your last one. And do that with each of them. One of the things that's interesting about the breath is that when we take a breath in, as soon as the in-breath ends, the out-breath usually begins immediately. But then when we finish the out-breath, usually there's a little bit of a gap. There's a little bit of a pause before we then take air in again. So see if you can notice that at the end of the exhale, usually there's a little bit of a break, and then the next breath begins. These are all things that we can work with at home, you know. Just pick one of these things and work with it for a month, you know. I'm just giving you a taste of a whole bunch of different things. Now gather your attention at the top of your head. See if you can feel the sensation of the hair sitting on the scalp. Or maybe if there's no hair there, maybe you can notice the air touching the top of your scalp. Or if you have a hat on, you can notice the pressure of the hat. I'm just asking you to notice sensations at the top of the head. And then for the next few minutes, we're going to move down slowly like a slow elevator and begin to see all the different sensations in the body. So begin to notice the sensations of your forehead and the top part of the side of your head and the top part of the back of your head. Now notice the sensation of your ears and what it feels like to be listening to my voice, with the sound going into your ears. Notice the back of your eye sockets. Notice the feeling of your nose on your face. Be aware of your cheeks and the sensations there. Notice the position of your tongue in your mouth. And the line of your jaw. And the bottom half of the back of your head. Notice sensations there. Notice the sensations of your whole entire neck. Holding the weight of your head. Notice if there's any stress in your shoulders. If there is, just try to relax there. Your upper chest, feeling the clothes resting there, and your upper arms. And your upper back. Just noticing the sensations there. If there is a little bit of discomfort, just observe the discomfort, not wanting it to be different. If there's any pain anywhere in the body, we're not trying to change it, we're just experiencing it fully. No stories added to it. In the middle of your back, perhaps leaning against the back of the chair, noticing the sensations there. Your elbow is in the position of the angle of the elbow. And your belly. And the way that your lower arms are resting on your lap or in whatever position it's in. Your hands and your fingers. Your butt as it presses down from gravity in the chair. The sensations there. Your private area. Your thighs in the front and the back. And the angle that it's presently in. And the knees. Just the sensations there. Your shins below the knee in front and the calves below the knee in back. And the sensations in your ankles. And noticing all the muscles and all the bones that are in your feet. And the feel of your feet in the shoes. Maybe to even wiggle your toes slightly just to feel what that's like. And then pulling back and noticing the field of awareness that can experience your whole entire body. Notice the sensations in your whole, in and around your whole entire body, like a bubble of awareness. This is a really great way to start the day, by the way. When you wake up in the morning, as soon as you realize you're awake, just become aware of all the sensations in and around your body, all the energy in and around your body. And then when the time seems right, open your eyes. I'd like to end the workshop with this reading. If we know anything about a path at all, it's only because of the great ones that have gone before us. Out of their love and kindness, they have left some footprints for us to follow. So in the same way that they wish for us, we wish that all beings everywhere, including ourselves, to be happy, to be safe, to have good health and enough to eat. And may we all live at ease of heart with whatever comes to us in life. Thank you.
Thank you.